So for the 4th of July, 250th birthday of America, we did the most oaky thing you could think of to celebrate the 4th of July, which is go to a rodeo. I mean, that's
yes,
very, very apropos for Oklahoma people, right?
Yes.
Just really checking the boxes for stereotypical Oklahoma person. And both Leo and John, Mutton Bust, at the rodeo. And they did it both Friday and Saturday.
All right.
First day, Leo had a tough sheep. It was a little rusty. You know, he only does it once a year. So he's going up against these little ranch hand boys who have sheep at their place. You know, and now, here's what's wild, is they actually put a rope around sheep and ride them like little kids will ride them like a bull. So they don't like just grapple them and like put them in a headlock and clamp their knees and try to ride them. They'll rope them around the midsection and hold on like they're riding a bull and ride them.
And this is one of the ways of competing?
Yes, which I think is totally unfair, because if you do well with that, you're clearly going to score better because it's just more impressive, right? It's just more like...
Okay, so it's not just time, it's also style.
Right. Because the second night, Leo drew a sheep and he rode it the full... he rode it actually for like 17 seconds. So way past 8 seconds. But from like second 6 to second 9, the sheep basically just kind of like very lightly trotted and even stopped for a second.
Yeah.
And Leo like was holding on, and he like looked at it from the side into his ear, and he kept yelling, "Keep going! Keep going!" Like, and just yelling at the sheep. It was hilarious because we got it on video, but yelling at the sheep to keep going because he knew he needed that sheep to do well for him
right.
to score well.
Yeah.
So it was really funny. He did. Leo did place. I think he placed. He was top 3.
Okay.
They named the first the top one. I don't know if he was second or third, but he got money and got a free snow cone. Total win as a 6-year-old.
It'd be interesting to know which one of those two he was more excited about.
I think it was the snow cone.
Yeah.
But I think he just liked the idea that he got money for it.
Sure.
So he did really well. It was a lot of fun. John, who's 3, he rode the sheep. He, the whole day going up to riding, he was all, chest puffed out, telling everybody he's going to ride a sheep. Got up there, crumbled, and was like, "Nope, you're riding it."
Yeah.
And he rode it, fell down. It lasted maybe 2 seconds. Fell down.
Yeah.
And then cried. And then once he got past that, then he said, then he had his chest puffed out again.
He was ready.
Immediately afterwards, he's like, "I'm not doing that again tomorrow." And then by the end of the night, he's like, "I'm riding a sheep tomorrow." And then the same thing happened the next night, but he felt really good about doing
it. So did he ever do it?
Yeah, he did it Saturday. Yeah, okay. He did both Friday and Saturday. Okay. Both times yielded the same results. He was not excited about, he was excited about doing it for the story, I think.
Well, and he watches. He did it. He's watching his older brother do it.
Right.
It's clearly like what people are doing.
Also, dude, the very first time he wrote it, on Friday night. So they did it Friday and Saturday night. Friday night. You don't know what sheep you're drawing, right? It's like, it's your turn. You go into the chute. Then they open the chute and send a
sheep
in there.
It's just sort of a random selection.
It's random, yeah. And dude, the first night, he drew the biggest sheep out of all of them. And I was like, oh man, this isn't going to end well. Because typically the bigger sheep, they're the dominant
ones.
They're stronger.
Yeah. But maybe it won't even hardly know he's up there.
Right. Well, he did. And so anyway, also, dude,
do you think, was a sheep strong enough to like carry me?
I don't know. Probably not.
Okay.
I think it would collapse because you're pretty big.
I mean, I've seen some, you know, like 120-pound sheep.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, okay.
So then one of the nights when it got to the bull riding, one of the bulls ran over a guy and then jumped out of the arena into the stands.
Yes.
It was like, that was pretty chaotic. We weren't there. I hate that.
Is everybody
there.
Okay?
Everybody's okay. But it was pretty crazy.
I've seen a video where that happened in Spain at a bullfight.
Yeah.
In Matador. And like, this bull was no ordinary bull. I mean, this was like a huge bull.
Yeah.
And it just, people were just screaming and running. And it's like scrambling in this, like these stadium seating, and it's terrible.
Yeah. And so the last night we were there, you know, I've always had this desire to ride a bull. You know, like, I don't know if we talked about it on there, but.
Which I have chided you for.
Right. And there's just something about, and I haven't been able to articulate it well enough yet. I was thinking about actually writing about it at some point, but I haven't been able to articulate, like, what is it about me who, like, I want to go in, I want to box, and I want to go in there and, like, you know, have a real fight. I want to go in there, I want to ride a bull, and I want to, like, actually fight. And, this isn't, like, a midlife crisis. It's, like, something that I've always, like, I've wanted to do these kind of things. So what is it about, like, the desire to, like, put myself out there on the line and give everything, and it's like on me whether I win or lose
or maybe
like,
die
or die or like put myself in something in a situation that is, it requires fortitude, but also you have to always requires prudence. So anyway,
and luck
and a lot of luck. So the last night there, I told Haley right before the bull riding started, I said, hey, I'll be right back. And I just said, hey, I'll be right back. She's like, okay. And typically, you know, either I'm going to go grab a beer or something like that. I decided, like, no, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to see and feel what it feels like to get up there right next to the chute with the bull and, like, maybe just see if I can talk my way into it. I don't know. Like, we'll just see.
Would they let amateurs do it?
Yeah, they'll let amateurs do it.
Okay.
You pay, and you can do it.
Sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Oh, baby, do you sign a waiver?
Yeah. So I get up there. The night that we were there, right when the bull riding started, a terrible storm blew in, and they ended up cutting it short. And so that's probably God telling me, like, hey, you don't do this. Like, there's been so many times where I've wanted to do things like, you know, have a real a box and an amateur boxing fight, and then COVID happened. Like, I had a fight scheduled, and
this is
COVID
God.
Happened.
This is God telling you, Adam.
Please,
you're being a little stupid right now. Okay,
it's like, God, why didn't you give me a sign? It's like, I gave you all the signs.
I literally shut down the world.
But so I was up there, and I kind of snuck my way up into, like, where the chute is.
I just want to sit on it. I'm not going to ride it.
I'm not going to ride it.
Just want to sit on it.
I didn't sit on it, but I did, like, get up there right, you know, right where the chute is, like, right where you get onto the bull. And, you know, I was with the, like, with the guy, with the cowboys that were, like, getting on the bulls. And, like, I just wanted to feel, what is it like? Like, what are they feeling? Like, what is the vibe? What is, like, the atmosphere, like, what does it feel like to be that close to such a powerful animal? It was pretty awesome. And probably providential that the storm came, because I was there. And then Haley, like, said she was waiting for me, thinking, like, maybe I went to go get a beer or something. And then she was like, where? Adam's been gone for a long time. And she was telling her aunt, she's like, Adam's been gone for a long time. Like, what is going on? She's like, I don't know. And then she saw me up right on the chute. She's like, Adam's by the chute. And the aunt was like, no, that's not Adam. It's like, no, Adam is up there. She's like, well, don't worry. They're not gonna let him ride a bull, you know? And she was like, no, you don't understand. Adam can talk his way into almost any situation.
Well, you don't have to talk your way into it. You just pay the money and sign the waiver.
But I hadn't signed up for it. But I mean, I could have made it happen.
If you pay the money,
if I paid the money, it's like I could have made it happen. And so anyway, they were like, she finally was, I think, getting a little nervous that Adam may be trying to.
I would have gone up to the announcer and say, I will give you $20 if you just say my name over the loudspeaker.
Up next in shoot three, Adam Minahan from Porter, Oklahoma.
Yeah. I got $20 for you right here. That's my wife right there. I just want to see what she does.
I should have done that. That would have been great. Anyway, I didn't write a bull, but that's what we did on the 4th of July. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was great.
Awesome.
You had a great 4th?
Great 4th. Yes. Hung out with some great people.
Did you go to Carl's?
Mm-hmm. I went to Carl's.
I heard it was awesome.
Great time. It was awesome.
Heard there was like 60 kids there.
Yeah, that was like three families. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
But I heard there was like a ton of people there, and it was a lot of fun.
It was great.
And
you, like, yeah, it was.
They did the, like, kids recited the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, and there was a teenage recitation of the Declaration of Independence, which, you know, I don't think I've ever read the entire thing. Or, like, it was not familiar beyond the beginning, right?
Right.
Which everybody knows.
We the people.
We had a bike parade. We decorated bikes. Had a bike parade. It was awesome.
You guys sang the national anthem?
I rode a bike in the parade and drank. I don't think I've ever drank a beer while riding a bicycle. An incredible experience.
What is it? Bunking.
Yeah, it's like, recommend.
It's not lunting. It's not, bunking.
Yeah, it's, yeah,
no, it's biking.
Something. It was awesome. It should have a name.
One demographic that Lionel Richie was not thinking of when he wrote that song, Easy Like Sunday Morning, was Catholic families. Because I don't know about you, Dave, but Sunday morning is pretty chaotic for us. We're trying to get all the kids into the van, beat Father down the aisle, get into our pews. But one thing as Father is I want to prepare my kids to receive the gospel before they actually get to Holy Mass. And one way we do that is by listening to the Amen app and listening to the Sunday gospel on the way to Holy Mass.
I agree. That's something that we always do as a family as well, is that we review the Sunday readings before we get there. That way, when you're there. We're enjoying another Teeling whiskey this evening. We had a Teeling a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
That was really good. This one is even better.
It is.
If I do say so. This is.
We don't have the keeper of the yummy scale with us.
He's not here, which is too bad because the whole yummy scale might transform before our very eyes again.
Again.
I feel like this would be some metamorphic.
7.321.
Out of 6.3.
Right. Potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a strong possibility, actually.
Yeah.
But so today we are drinking the Wonders of Wood Pot Still Teeling Whiskey, Virgin Swedish Oak. So I don't recall ever seeing a whiskey aged in Swedish oak. I will tell you, I know nothing about the kind of oak they have in Sweden. And if it makes a difference or not, I will tell you, this whiskey is delicious.
Dangerously delicious.
It's so good. It was more expensive especially for an Irish whiskey. This one is $93. But I'll tell you what.
Presentation's great.
The presentation, it comes in a nice box, which is wood. It's a real wood like box, and well, actually, it's fake wood. It's not real wood. I take it back. That's not wood. That's cardboard. But it has print on it. It looks like wood
with wood grain on it.
I've had though many more expensive whiskeys than this that didn't have this amount of flavor, resonance, depth. I'm just a huge fan of Teeling. I think that the things that they're doing over there in Dublin, they're doing well.
Agreed.
So
very good.
This once again, the Wonders of Wood single pot still. How's Mary doing?
We've had a good like 5-6 days, 7 days now, I guess.
How old is she now?
She is a little over 4 months. Yeah, over a little over 4 months.
You put that. You sent us that picture the other day of her smiling. Yeah. Oh my gosh!
Did that not break your heart,
dude? Like, it didn't break my heart.
I mean,
it
was like melt your heart.
Oh yeah,
melt
totally.
Your
like that was such a smile. Like she's got this like tubing in her face and stuff, and she's that's not getting in her way at all. It's like I'm gonna smile right through all of this stuff.
It was so great. It was good.
Did you post that? Are you posting that on social media? Like, is
I'm
there
sure
a,
I will be.
Is there
at
a place
point.
If people like want to follow? Do you have
you
a page
can
set
me
up?
On
for, you can just okay, yeah. yeah. Follow at Adam Minahan.
Yeah, you can follow me. That's where we give
it. That was really such a great picture. It was
really,
awesome.
It really was. It was really good for you know. For us as parents, you know, to see that it was the first we had one video, and I actually posted it a while, you know, a couple weeks ago or maybe a week ago, of a video of her, and it was like kind of like a half smile, like a or like a quick like little raise of the lips,
yeah,
and so that was like the first time we'd seen that, but her capturing that with her like smiling. Was very good for the heart and soul.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Would you? Could you put it on the Catholic Man Show page?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll
people,
do that.
People can go follow us there also.
Yeah. 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 I could do that. Yeah. So she's doing like we had a really bad week about a week ago. Took a big step back. This is the life of the NICU. There's peaks and valleys. When the valleys hit, you have to kind of climb out of them. And you take quite a few steps back to get back to where you were. Yeah.
That's why you're in the NICU, because right. you're in that kind of situation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel that we're back to where we were before we kind of digressed.
So that's quick recovery.
That's a quick recovery, which is really good.
Praise God.
Her breathing is getting a little bit better. You know, there's been talks of trying to get her open heart surgery scheduled, you know, within the next maybe 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
So, you know, that'd be great as well. You know, when you have a child in the NICU with a lot of things that you have to overcome, setting milestones and setting things, you know, conquering one little milestone at a time and then setting the next thing, you know, goal in sight to where you have like, okay, this is what we're shooting for next. Is really good to have like for the parents especially
for your just emotional health,
right?
Yeah,
just to know like this is where we're trying to get to,
because otherwise you think about the you know if you kind of like look in too far ahead and
right.
it just seems overwhelming,
right?
All of the stuff, and certainly today it looks way less overwhelming, you know, than in the weeks after she was born. It seemed unaccomplishable. At some point. And that's why you do it, because now look where you are.
Right. And this is what I was telling Haley the other day. It's like, so, you know, in the NICU, there's this, what's called, kind of called a tree, right? And so it's just this, a pole with a stand with a pole, and it branches out and it has all these.
They might hang IV bags on it and stuff.
Like IV bags and like different medicines and things on there. And, you know, when she was first born, there was probably like 15 to 20 of those things on the tree, you know, where it was just cut. I mean, they couldn't put more things on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we get down to like, hey, we only have 5. Like, this is the, like, look where we were and look where we are now. And then, like, now, you know, we only have maybe like 4 active. And it's like, hey, that's.
Yeah. That's an interesting visualization of progress.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
But it's like, hey, she doesn't need this anymore. We don't have to give this to her anymore. Which is good. So,
thank you everyone for your prayers.
Yes.
Because they have not been in vain. They have absolutely made a difference in the life of Mary and Adam and his family. So,
and especially like Lady Haley, who's done just a heroic job.
She's you know there having to like watch the setbacks and
right.
like you know even when there's good things, she doesn't have there's no you know because you have to be here with your kids.
Right.
You know, there's not people there to celebrate with.
Right.
That's also hard.
Right.
You know, so good. Well, I'm glad she's doing well. So we'll all keep up the prayers for her. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk today about what to do when you're struggling.
And nothing. I have nothing. I know. To say
so that's
about
what I'm going
to
tell you.
I feel exposed. I feel like when you said like you were like, hey, we're gonna. So a long time ago when we were doing the Catholic Man show, you and I both, unbeknownst to one another, after a conversation we had, we realized that we were picking topics based off of people that we knew and what we saw where they were struggling with, and be like, oh, they're struggling with this. We're going to talk about that and how to like.
Let's do an episode for that guy.
Let's do an episode for that guy.
And a lot of times that guy was me.
I was the guy.
Yeah.
And then when you sent me a text message, you said, hey, I want to talk about like what to do when you're struggling. I'm like, thanks, bro. Mm-hmm. For like, this is my topic.
I hope you have a pen.
Right. I need to take a lot of notes.
Write this down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's not just spiritual struggling. You know, this could be all kinds of stuff. You know, whether you're struggling to focus at work, whether you're have a problem that you just are really struggling to find a solution to, right? Whatever it may be, these are, at the end of the day, all of these things come down to difficulties with human nature and the way that we're made and the fact that we have appetites and an intellect and a will. Okay, and that we have external forces acting on all of these things at the same time, right? That we are subject, we are in an environment that is influencing all of these parts of our being, okay? Which often don't allow them to function the way that we want them to or the way that they ought to, okay? And so a lot of it comes down to identifying what's out of whack. Okay, am I thinking about this the wrong way? Or is this really just, am I giving in to some of these external influences?
Am I perceiving reality in which it actually is?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's amazing how when you think about, and you kind of step back and say, who is the human person? All right, he's, you know, this is who he is. He's got these parts. And these are the things that can impact the intellect. Intellect isn't influenced by the same thing that the will is or the same thing that the appetites are, right? They all have different triggers, motivators, you know, whatever it is. And when you just kind of compartmentalize and break it down, you can sometimes recognize what the trouble is. And that makes finding the solution very easy because otherwise you're like, gosh, just keep struggling, like, you know, and you don't know what it is. Right? It's like, I don't know what it is. Every time after I eat all these pancakes, I just can't get it going.
Can't get going. Maybe it's because you ate a loaf of bread and syrup.
Yeah. And so sometimes I think we, you know, it's like a lot of times you'll hear people like, oh, we're just being lazy, you know, or you just have some of these trigger words, you know, whatever. And I think that's usually not the case. Usually, I don't think our problems are because of laziness. I think usually it's because of it's a disorder. I mean, laziness is a disorder, I guess. But
I would say that it's because we don't have a clear vision of what the end is and the ends that we're trying to achieve. That we know that we need to accomplish this to make money, or accomplish this to be a better father, accomplish this to be a better husband, and the routes that we take for this don't lead to the end that we're trying to achieve. And we can be busy and work without actually hitting the end goal.
Busy at the wrong stuff.
Right.
Yep. A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it.
Okay, so we're talking about what to do when you're struggling, how to how that affects your life, how to like reorient yourself back. What are the things that you're struggling with? How is it that you adapt to it? I want to just like read you like a quick synopsis of somebody. I think you know who it is. I'll let you guess at the end.
Okay.
To talk about like the struggle of life, because it's very easy to look at what we're doing in life and be like, man, I like the struggles that I have, right? Woe is me. So this guy was born the youngest of three in a small European town. His sister died in infancy before he was born. So he grew up really only as an only child in practice. Okay. His older brother was 12 when he was born and ended up becoming kind of his role model, the guy who was really important to him. His mother died when he was only 8 years old before he even received his first Holy Communion. Mm. 3 years later, his older brother, who was a young doctor, caught scarlet fever when he was taking care of one of his own patients and died within days of catching scarlet fever. And this boy was only 12 years old at this time. He later said that his brother's death may have hit him harder than his own mother's because he had such a connection to his brother. That left him alone with his father and a former army officer who is deeply religious, who did the cooking and cleaning and raised the boy essentially as a single parent in a small apartment. The son later called his father an example of the domestic seminary, I thought was awesome.
I think that's the giveaway.
Then the boy, when he was 19, his country was invaded. Tanks and planes from one direction and then within weeks, the next direction. He and his father fled on foot, sleeping in ditches and avoiding being caught by aircrafts before being forced to turn back to his home. The university where he was studying literature and acting was shut down by the occupying army. And to avoid being deported to a labor camp in a foreign country, he took a job breaking limestone with a pickaxe in a quarry and then worked night shifts at a chemical plant. Two jobs. In the middle of all this, his father, the only one left in his family, died of a heart attack while he was out at work. He was 20 years old. So his mother, his brother, his father, his sister, they're all gone before he was 21 years old.
Wow.
He began studying the priesthood in secret because the occupying government was executing priests. So he realized that this government is executing priests. There's going to be a shortage. I am called to this. But if he had been caught, he would have been killed. So he kept working at the quarry, breaking limestone, which I don't know if you've ever, like, limestone is ridiculously hard. Like, that's intense labor. But he's doing this by day, so he wasn't suspected of being a priest.
Or studying to be one.
Studying to be one. One night he was walking home from the quarry, and he was struck by a truck and knocked unconscious. He woke up in the hospital 2 weeks later with a severe concussion.
Wow. That is a good striking.
Yes.
2 weeks. You don't wake up for 2 weeks?
Yeah. Later that same year, the secret police swept through his city, rounding up the young men off the street. He avoided being captured only because he was hiding in his uncle's basement while the soldiers were searching the home. He survived the war. He was ordained a priest. And over the following decades, under communist government, was despised. Who despised him watched his every move, everything that he did, and he quietly and patiently combated the government and became the first man from his part of the world to hold a position in a church for over 400 years. Then 3 years. 3 years into that role, a gunman shot him twice at close range in front of a crowd of thousands. He nearly died by bleeding to death, and he spent weeks in recovery. And when he was well enough, he did something no one else would have expected. But he went to the prison where the guy who was the assassin or attempted assassin was held and sat down across from him and forgave him to his face.
Yeah. I definitely know who this is now.
In the last years, a disease slowly took his ability to walk steadily and then to speak clearly and then finally to speak at all. He kept appearing in public anyway, trembling, barely being able to stand, because he believed people needed to see the life that doesn't lose dignity when the body starts to fail. And he died holding a rosary, having lost his voice completely, communicated his final words by writing them down. Who is that man?
Karol Wojtyła.
That's right. Who is?
A.K.A. John Paul II.
John Paul II. A man who had many, many struggles in life.
Many struggles. And you didn't even go into the part how, you know, he's there in town and ashes, the concentration camps were nearby, which would regularly rain down ashes from the burning of his fellow countrymen. It's literally, this is like what's left of their body raining down on the city. Struggle after struggle after, I mean, a very, very difficult life. He had other more political struggles in his papacy. I mean, he's truly a guy who struggled a lot.
But as a saint.
But also is a great example of someone who met all of these struggles with joy, with faith and trust in our Lord.
Perseverance.
Yeah.
And this is what I wanted to kind of reflect on, and what I've been reflecting on recently, is that when things are hard, these are the stories and these are the moments that, one, your kids are going to look back on, knowing who you are and how you handled them. But then also, maybe even more importantly, how, like, the stories that you will tell your grandkids, and you should tell them these struggles and what you did. Because kids need to know and have good role models and know the real struggles in life and what you sacrifice, what you are willing to sacrifice for a greater good. So when things get hard and your family life is tough, your business life is tough, you don't have as much time for the community aspects that you wish you had, and like it just seems like it's all piling up. Your house is breaking down, like your car doesn't work, your insurance company is you're going around and around with them. When all the things that happen in life, when all of these things are weighing on you, there's something that you can take this as a woe is me scenario, or you can take this as, this is going to make even better story to be able to tell my grandkids of, this is grandfather's story that he did for the family.
I think more than that, it's not just going to make a better story. It's going to make you a better person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm looking at it not just from a personal perspective, but what that story can give to other kids. And that's actually kind of where I've really been thinking about. And I should have probably prefaced that, because clearly the idea is like, it's going to, if you have it oriented towards redemptive suffering and oriented towards God, it purifies your soul and brings you closer to the redemption of Christ on the cross, and you're uniting your sufferings to Him.
Yeah.
But I think that there are just not enough stories told to our kids that are redemptive, that are really a real story that is human struggle.
Yeah.
Because the kids have role models today that are all pop culture, that are all, you know, athletes, and those can be good things. Like, it's good to have role models who are athletes and things like that, if they have they have redemptive qualities and things you can look up to. But having being able to pass on the story of what you've done for your family is inherently good for your grandkids to hear, so they know where you've come from. They know where what you've done for the good of the family, so that they can look up and say, like, eventually they're going to be hit with all these things in their life, and they're going to say, like, well, Grandpa did this, And if grandpa could do this, then I can do this.
Yeah, if you're a millennial, your grandparents probably have some incredible stories to tell about growing up in the Depression era or right after, right?
Right, World War II, yeah.
Like my grandfather, when he was like six, got a job carrying bags of coal up a hill. He wasn't old enough to go in the coal mine, but he would carry these bags of coal up a hill for like 5 cents a day, something like that. You know, I mean, just.
But this is the story.
That made that generation, all of those difficult struggles made them what they are, right? Because they didn't let those struggles, they persevered through them.
Right. And I think kids need to hear good examples of what perseverance looks like, of what hope and faith in Christ look like, even when the world is against you, even when you feel like I can't win, even regardless of how hard I try. Because I think every man, regardless whatever the varying degree, they will feel like they cannot win regardless of how hard they try. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make you a failure. That happens to everybody. It's how you react to it and how you're able to offer that up and unite your sufferings to Christ in the redemptive suffering aspect, and then being able to say, I'm getting up again. Today, I will be a saint.
So we've talked a lot about some great examples of people who have overcome struggles in their life. I think it's essential to have those kinds of examples, to tell those kinds of stories.
A perspective.
To have the perspective, right. It's important to know. I forget the author who said this, but they said that it's the importance of dragons in children's stories.
G.K. Chesterton.
Was it him? Okay. That the importance is not that dragons exist. They know that children know dragons exist. The importance is that children need to know they can be conquered, that they can be defeated.
That's Chesterton.
Okay. And I think that there's a good analogy here that struggles exist and no one will avoid them. The important thing is that we tell these stories to each other, to our kids, that we even as adults have these to reflect on, because struggles will be present all the time, and we need to make sure that we maintain that attitude of victory, right? That
Christ has already won it.
Right, and you know, that doesn't mean that all your problems at work are just going to get easy, but by persevering, even if things don't go your way, that's fine. You know, like John Paul II, when all of his family died, I imagine that's not the way he wanted that to go.
Right. Before he was 20.
Yeah.
Or 21. Before he was 21.
And then I imagine a huge percentage of his friends died in the concentration camp, right? That a lot of the priests he looked up to were also martyred. I mean, he is a guy who was dealing with a lot of losses on a deep level, right? But he kept going, and he maintained his joy and his faith. So these stories, just like, you know, reading the stories of the martyrs, it's just good for the soul. It's something that you know, we should make practice of doing. I kind of mentioned earlier that there's these, you know, parts of the human person that I think mostly when I'm struggling, just for me, I think mostly it's my intellect or my appetites sometimes, but a lot of times it's an attack on my mind, right? And just the way, how am I allowing myself to think about this? What kind of choices am I making? Am I choosing the good, right? Or am I choosing easy over the good? One thing that Saint Augustine says in the Confession, he says, the mind commands the body and it obeys instantly. The mind commands itself and is resisted. So, you know, often we know what we ought to do, but I'm just not, maybe later. And in my experience, that is where a lot of my struggles come from, because you know what? It's going to come back around by kicking the can down the road. The can doesn't ever go away. You still have to deal with whatever it is. I'm kind of summarizing here a lot of things.
You haven't actually summarized hardly anything.
Well, I am. I'm doing it right now here on my notes. We're going to skip a lot of it. That's okay, because we've been talking a lot of good stuff.
Wait, before you do, you got to, like, that core concept on appetites and intellect you should talk about with Aquinas. I think that's
okay.
Solid.
So it's this idea that if you're struggling, whether you're struggling to focus at work or on whatever it is your duties are, it's rarely laziness, kind of like what I mentioned earlier. St. Thomas Aquinas says that human actions rely on a harmony between the intellect and the appetite. And struggle often occurs where there is a misalignment or an internal civil war between these two things, which and this can be caused by stress, exhaustion, or, outside factors.
Distractions, yeah.
Distractions are huge for me. And whether it's, curiosity, the older I get, the more I realize. When I was younger, I would read things about how curiosity is this major vice. And it's like, okay, yeah, I guess I see how that's possible. The older I get, the more my eyes are being opened to how curiosity is actually I see it more now in my own, as the underlying cause in the things that cause struggles in my life. Mm. Because I didn't need to go down that road. Yeah. Whereas before, when I was younger, I was just interested in that. And that's because I lacked focus and I lacked an understanding of, kind of like what you were saying, what my goals are. I had not clearly defined those for myself. And so that allowed me just like, oh, sure, I'm interested in this. Let's just see about it. But now that I have a clearer picture of what that is, those other things are in my mind, I could see, no. That's not what I'm about.
Even if it's a good.
No. Even if it's good. That's correct.
I mean, that's a good point. And that's where a lot of times where I've struggled, where it's like, oh, this is actually good. Actually, reading, the Summa at times is like, this is good. Like, it helps me. And so I would divert my attention to that and neglect the thing that I'm supposed to be focused on.
Right. Yeah, and it, because I lacked a clear picture of the good. The more we can come to know the good, the more we love the good, the more we can be good, right? And I really see more and more how it was curiosity was the underlying cause of these distractions, which was pulling me off course, diverting me from the things I ought to be doing. And it was far less effective at work, far less effective as a husband, as a father, right? Because of all these things that I just didn't have that clearly defined picture in my mind about the good I'm striving for, what I'm about, what's my goal in the next 15 minutes? What am I supposed to do?
This is like a hard-hitting thing. Like, we're reading the Aeneid with my boys over the summer. And actually, yesterday I was gonna be like, okay, we're gonna read another book. I'm gonna read this out loud. We're gonna read, and like I was so mentally exhausted, so physically exhausted, that I just said, I took the easy way out, and I said, no, we're not gonna do it tonight. And it was, instead I said like, oh, we'll just throw something on the TV, or I don't even remember what we did. You know, I took the easy way out, and it's like, because I didn't have that end goal, it's like, no, even when you're tired, even when you're exhausted, even when you don't feel like doing it, that's when you're supposed to do it. That's when you have to, like, man up and say, like, you know, I set this goal. This is what my intent was. This was the end goal. We have to accomplish this.
Sure.
And I just failed at it.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a, you know, you can always be flexible about things, but yeah,
if it's scrupulosity, but like, that was the goal. Like, the goal,
correct.
The goal was to finish this by the end of the summer. Now we have to play catch up because I chose. Because
you didn't want to.
Because I didn't want to.
Yeah. I mean, if it just comes down to that, oh, I just don't want to. Man, I'll tell you what, when I don't want to do something,
that's the hardest time.
I can come up with great reasons not to.
Yeah.
Like, real fast. I'm good. Adam, I'll tell you, I'm good at that.
Oh, I know.
So, when you are struggling, you need a remedy, okay? You need to come up with, because often struggling, just like virtues, they become habits. Mm-hmm. And that's when you find yourself in this rut that you cannot get out of. And this is this is so common with sin, right? That we find ourselves committing sins, and every time we say, never again, until the, like, 24 hours later, when you find yourself
in the same situation.
Yeah, but okay, not next time, you know. Right. And we have to address this. There are spiritual and natural solutions that we need to employ, because we are body soul composites, right? That we are not just angels. We can't pray our way out of everything. We also can't forget to beg the Lord for his grace to save us from these things, right? So you can't just, like, oh, you change your diet, you know, you'll really stop sinning. That's not the way that works.
This is why I harp on the idea of, like, it's not about willpower, it's about setting yourself in the right scenarios. Like, putting yourself in the atmosphere to succeed. Because the willpower will give so quick. And you'll see it time and time again. Oh, I want to work out every single day. It's like, well, do you put yourself in the atmosphere to be able to work out every single day? Oh, I'm not going to commit this sin anymore. Well, do you put yourself in this situation to where you won't have the opportunity to make that sin? Scenarios and atmosphere play such a bigger role in the way of life than trying to willpower through it.
So I recently had to make this this admission to myself, that there is a part of me that does not want to be holy. I say, oh no, I want to follow God's will. I want to become holy. I want to do that. Except there is a part of me that says, no, I don't. I don't want that. And when I made that recognition and admitted that to myself, I immediately said, okay, I need to do war. I need to do battle against this other part of me. And it was, I'm not just going to ignore this duplicity that's inside right. of me anymore. That was a big struggle. And recognizing, hey, this is a problem. Boom, I immediately said, okay, well, I see the path forward.
We're out of time on Catholic Radio. Go check us out on the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Sorry, it's your glass. I think that's so key, dude.
Dude, that really just was the, like, last week that I had this. It was a grace to, you know, have this recognition in myself that there is this part of me that's not a small part.
This is a Bishop Slattery moment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He used to. I know exactly what you're talking about.
May he rest in peace.
Indeed. Where I just realized, no. There's a part of me that does not want to be holy, that wants to give in to sin. That says, no, I actually want that. No, virtue, that sucks. It's hard. I would much rather give in, succumb to all my desires to just, and that there is that person is me and lives inside of me. It is me. It's not like it's not a demon, or it's not just temptation. Of course, the demonic powers will use that part of me to their advantage. But I have to recognize that that is something that's like First of all, because I've committed sins in my life, I have made room for that person in me, right? And so I just realized,
well, to give into appetites.
That's right. This is where the battle is, right? And I have this person, and the person is me, that I must wage war against. And as soon as I recognized that, I said, okay, well, how do I do that? Okay, well, I'm going to immediately, it was so motivating to deny myself. You know, fasting is hard. I hate doing it. But all of a sudden, when I realized that, I see the problem clearly, I'm more motivated to do it. I'm more motivated to do these other things. I'm more motivated to put energy into my prayer life. I'm more motivated to do these, to be virtuous, to try to put myself in God's presence more intentionally throughout the day. You know, so it was a really key moment for me. And it's not just me. I think that this is the reality for all of us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Because
sin is alluring, and we do want it. I mean, I do. I have. That's why it's hard, right? Because I have to say no, no. Yes, it looks cool, but it isn't. It's stupid.
I want to say yes to a greater good.
That's right. Right. But
I want to be more human, not
correct.
Less.
That's right. Yeah, but there's that part of me
that wants to be like a bestial like aspect of
yes,
your of you
that's
that
right.
wants to be
that wants to just be slothful, that wants to be indulged.
Succumb.
Yeah. That wants to surrender the higher parts for the sake of ease,
lower,
and comfort, and other things. Right. So we need fortitude. We need a recognition of what the good is. We need to know what that good is. So we can't just recognize it. We need to pursue it. We need to come to a knowledge of it, right? In sort of like the biblical sense, we need to know the good. That way we can love it, and that way we can desire it.
And serve it.
Because there are atheists who recognize good things. That, you know, who recognize that, like, okay, you know, certain things about the Bible or whatever, that certain, you know, that, yeah, there's
Sermon on the Mount is good,
right? But they don't know the good. They haven't come to a knowledge of it, even though they know a lot about it. So we need to have that, so that we can want it, so that we can recognize that it is lovable, because that's a big problem. I think that it's like these things are good, but are they lovable, right? And that's what we need to really dive deep into virtue, right? And so it takes fortitude. We have to pursue. We have to like persevere. And I think that another big thing is pursuing small victories, right? So that we get a habit of winning. Because ultimately, fortitude is sort of a virtue of winning. That you win by not losing. You just stay in the game. You keep going.
Well, this is why Dave Ramsey's philosophy works so well, right? Like, whether you agree or disagree with his like financial aspects of it, like his whole idea is like you just keep winning. You pay off the small debts.
Yeah.
So that way you win. And then you go to the next debt and you pay that off. So that you win. And like, this is why he's been so successful in his, you know, in his philosophy and in the way he talks about things.
Undoubtedly, he's helped thousands of people who sing his praises. He's changed the lives of many people, financially
probably
speaking.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's wisdom there about developing habits, okay? You know, that if you break your day down, we've talked to this in like 15-minute increments, whatever works for you. Make it 5 minutes if 15 minutes is too long. Can you win over the next 5 minutes, 15 minutes? Great, do that. And just keep going. You know, if you're fasting and you're really finding that to be difficult.
Can you win the next 15 minutes?
Yeah, that's right. can you make it another 15 minutes with a good attitude? Whatever it may be. Dude, that way you just build that habit of victory. And because that's a virtue. It has to be habitual, that you learn to keep going. And then when that 15 minutes over, can you do another one? It's just 15 more minutes, right? You'll be okay. So, I've got a lot of other things here, but I think we've talked about enough. The last thing I really want to say about struggles, especially I think when it comes to sinful, like when people struggle with sin, and everybody does, right? For men especially, I think I'd give different advice to women. Honestly, I don't know what advice I'd give to women. But I think for men, we need to remember to maintain custody of our eyes. So much of, I'm not on the other side of the confessional, but I'm just guessing the vast majority of men confess certain sins, right? And forget about, if you're struggling at work, that's so much less important than if you're struggling with sin. Struggling to maintain your state of grace is infinitely important. And so we have to, in maintaining custody of the eyes, stopping things before it happens, if you can stop the struggle before it starts, that's a huge, it's like the game genie. For those of you who are old enough to know what a game genie is, of success and victory. And it's also hard. It's harder because in the beginning, it's like, oh, I'm going to look at her. She's beautiful. Whatever, just whatever the scenario is. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with looking at her. Except that it might lead, it's just the first step on this path. You've been down that road. You know where it leads. It always leads to the same dead end, right? So we just have to build the strength, develop those virtues of custody of the eyes and of the other senses as well. Because maybe custody of the eyes is not your thing. It's not your struggle. But fortitude is the virtue that we need in order to do that. And I think that'll help with our struggles in life. We can pursue virtue and holiness, and we'll all be together in heaven someday, and it will be awesome.
Through the grace of God.
Amen.